Covering the diamond like the world's biggest rain tarp, Pete Wagner and former Twins Gene Larkin and Al Newman. On Deck Radio with 105 The Ticket.
Phil Hughes on the mound for the Twins. I think this is a very, very important start for Phil.
Breaking ball. Strike three. A foul tip. Suzuki hangs on. Division having a good Friday night. And Cabrera late on a fastball. Strikes out two down. The center. Hicks running over toward the gap. A diving catch by Hicks. What a catch by the Twin center fielder. Takes off on the 3-2 pitch. Bauer drives it to the gap in left center field. Hunter around second. That ball will run to the warning track. Hunter around third. He'll score on an RBI double for Joe Bauer.
Welcome and good morning, everybody, to On Deck Radio along with Gene Larkin. I'm Pete Wagner. Al Newman is on location right now, so you're going to be stuck with me and Gene and, of course, David Helmer behind the controls. I'm going to go brush the easel.
You make me laugh every time I come in. You got different hockey jerseys every week. L.A. Kings.
I picked this one out for you.
Rogi Vachon. I love it.
You know, it's the purple hooded sweatshirt jersey looking thing.
Nice.
And it is just... It's about as comfortable as it looks.
I thought it might have been Memorial Day. Something happened Memorial Day way back when growing up.
First thing you say is Kings. I go Triple Crown, baby. Dave Taylor, Charlie Simmer, Marcel Dion. But if I could repaint the picture of hearing the very depressed Jack Buck, I think we all agreed that he was depressed when he said, oh, the Twins are going to win the World Series. It's like he was asking it, kind of. So Gene does the old arms up in the air. It was like he was reliving it. It was unbelievable. I said, I got to go brush
the moment
the
easel in time they'll never forget.
It was beautiful. The people have been robbed
you
because we don't have the webcam.
Until the Twins get back to the World Series, I will have the last hit in Minnesota Twins World Series history.
Well, I got two things for you. You're probably going to have the last hit in Minnesota Twins World Series history, because if you've checked out the world events, the world's coming to an end. So I'm kidding.
They're playing good.
They are really playing well.
This is 2 weeks in a row if you can have positivity in the broadcast.
Well, I was talking about that this morning. You know, I mean, it's so much better to be able to do these programs when you can talk about a successful run and not get into, we've got holes here. We got to fix this. We got to fix that. And there's so many topics to talk about today. And one of the things I do want to get into with you is you completed your American Legion tryouts. And I want to talk about that process. Mm-hmm. And also what you're seeing from players today and you know, what they're bringing that people wouldn't really recognize or know. I want to go down that road a little bit. I want to talk about the Twins run in Pittsburgh. Joe Mauer had headlines, a grabber with a game-winning homer in the 13th inning. He now leads the team and runs batted in with 25.
Yeah.
So he's getting the job done there. I talk about Phil Hughes and his performance. Tim Kolomainen is going to join us at 11:45.
Wow, you've got a lot of
topics. We're going to talk high school baseball. Minnetonka loses in the first round. How about this? This is a shocker. Chan Hansen sent to the loser's bracket. Yeah. And so there's plenty of things going on. Like your defending state champion, Moundsview Mustangs, with a gritty 2-1 win. One, I think, as a number one seed they weren't expecting. So there's plenty to talk about there. And what we'll do now is we're just going to get straight into the twin scene with you. And one of the things that I wanted to get onto, which was an interesting trend, and I was going to put it in my five questions segment with you, Gene, but I think I want to get to it right away because it's feeling like a trend at this stage of the game. In their last three games, they've finished off the games 1-for-25, 3-for-31, and 1-for-21, 5-for-77 in that stretch, and an 0-65 batting average. With that said, they're 2-1.
Right.
They won two of those games, but it has been interesting watching the quick starts, boom, out of the gates, and then nothing.
Well, I think it's part of it is the pitching that they're facing. They start off a little bit shaky, and then all of a sudden they figure it out. And typically when you go through a lineup once or twice, both from an offense perspective and from a pitching perspective, you kind of figure out what's going to work for you as a pitcher, and then the hitters try to make the adjustment. You go back and forth, back and forth. So they haven't been hitting collectively. The Twins have gotten big hits, like the Joe Mauer single. We talked about that drove in three runs, which is still baffling
to
me.
That was like a squirter that barely got through. Well, how did you score from first?
I know we're not going to specifically talk about Joe, but what I find hard to understand about how they defense Joe is everybody tries to have this shift now, okay? Because Joe is more of an opposite field hitter. But when the pitcher doesn't throw on the outside part of the plate, it doesn't make any sense to me. You know, because last night he hits a routine grounder, typically, right?
Yeah.
Or excuse, routine double, but typically other teams have had the center fielder in left center field, which that would have been an easy out. But this team has him straight up, so that double could have been caught. So various teams are shifting him in different ways, which I can't understand. And the single that drove in three runs, that was a normal ground ball, a step to the left, step to the right at shortstop, and the left fielder just basically took the play off. You know, it was a routine play, and he's going to lob it into the shortstop for the cutoff man. And Dozier was very skillful and very aggressive. And Gene Glynn, you could say, it was great, not told him to keep going, and made the left fielder look embarrassed. So those are the good things that happened. We talk about what has changed in this team this year. They're more aggressive on the base passes. It seemed like they're more instinctual on the bases. And Brian Dozier, to me, when I watch him play day in and day out, is a very underrated base runner. He does a lot of good things. Everybody talks about his defense and his power from the one spot in the lineup, but he does a lot of good things on the bases that don't, you know, add up in the box score.
Well, and to score from first on that, you have to read that right away, right? Obviously, because you got to be committed. You've mentioned Gene Glynn in the past. Yep. Is you like the work he does at third base. Yep. For that novice who doesn't really know what that would be and what the difference between a really good third base coach and an average one is, what is it?
I think anybody who plays sports or coaches sports cannot be afraid to make a mistake. They have to know the situations, and he's a very aggressive third base coach. But he's a very intelligent third base coach. He knows his base runner speeds, how they cut the corner on third base. And the first thing you have to know as a third base coach, who's playing the outfield against you? Who charges the ball very, very well? Because you don't have to have a very good arm if you charge the ball well and release the ball well and have an accurate throwing arm. And then those guys who have cannons, they can get away with not charging it as well or as quickly because they've got a very, very good arm. So he knows the outfielders that he's playing with against every series. He knows his base runners. And so far, the first 30 or 40 games that he's coached third, he's shown me that a lot of intelligence and a lot of aggressiveness in the way he approaches his job.
And I think he proved he was a pretty good manager with Rochester back in his day. Mm-hmm. By the way, if you want to give us a call, talk some baseball. This is On Deck Radio with Gene Larkin and Pete Wagner, 651-989-9105. David Helmer behind the controls, making things happen as we talk baseball, Minnesota Twins style. By the way, I got to ask you this. Could the Pittsburgh Pirates be the scrappiest, most unkept team you've ever seen? I mean, what is the look there?
Yeah, I mean, I like their team. I really do.
I know.
McCutcheon's been he's a five-tool guy. The Harrison kid that plays third base came out of nowhere last year. I think the way he plays the game is just the way you want him. You know, he gets down and dirty, good aggressive hitter, fields the position. Their outfield's young. They've very talented. Probably from the minor leagues last year, those are the two or three guys. Polanco came up and started hitting home runs. Alvarez is a good power hitter at first base. So they've got all the makings.
Did you see that thing? He crushed into the river?
Yeah.
Into the boat.
Yeah,
into the boat.
Exactly. So they're a team that's probably underachieving right now, but I think at the end they're going to be there fine.
And the former Twin, Francisco Liriano, who's had such a nice run there, got absolutely
couldn't throw a slider. And typically, when he's with the Twins, he had a nasty slider, good fastball, good runner, good two-seamer. Just could not get the ball over the plate.
We saw a few of those outings, where he put four or five great
outings.
So for us, it was almost like, nothing's changed. But right. I mean, if you look at the body of work that he's delivered for the Pittsburgh Pirates over the years,
he's been terrific.
Been great, yes.
He's been terrific.
So that's a nice win to have against their former teammate. Phil Hughes last night comes out. I think he felt like he had a fine outing. He was really down on himself on a defensive play that wasn't made that really led to a bigger inning than it needed to be for the Chicago White Sox. But there wasn't a lot of margin for error. Pete Samardzija. Your thoughts there on him as a pitcher?
He's got great stuff. He's been very, very inconsistent. Again, we talk about early in the ball game. He's not a very good. He gets lit up quite frequently in his starts so far this year. Then all of a sudden, he becomes Nolan Ryan. He's got a great slider, and he's a guy that's got three strikeout pitches. So he's nasty. He's going to be a free agent. So it's going to be interesting who steps up and tries to sign him, or the White Sox try to sign him to a multi-year deal. But Phil uses, but I think we tried to evaluate him based on last year, which he was unhittable. He was terrific. He's not hitting his spots very well. When I watched that game, last night, you know, whether Suzuki was setting up inside or outside, he was missing with fastballs. A lot of 0-2 fastballs that were very, very hittable that the White Sox hitters fouled back, which I thought he got away with a lot of mistake pitches. But, you know, he grinded it out again. Mahler talked about it after the game. He gave us a chance to win, and he did. But he's, to me, he's missing too many spots. When you face good hitting teams from 1 through 9 in the lineup, he's going to get hurt unless things start to change a little bit. But again, you know, he threw seven good innings last night. He kept him in the game, but you know, I expect from a pitcher's perspective, a control perspective, I expect a little bit more based on what he showed me last year.
What's it going to take for him to get that back?
You know, I don't know. I don't know what's different. He's injury free. It's just maybe he's mechanically off just a little bit. Maybe his confidence was off a little bit. We talked about in the last few outings, he's trying to mix in a curveball. Well, his curveball wasn't very good. Mm-hmm. It was way, not even close. So you throw 0-2 curveballs that are not even close to be hitting. It's kind of a wasted pitch. And then he had to rely back on the fastball again and again, missing his spots. But, you know, he kept him in the game through seven great innings. And he only walked one guy. But I thought when I watched him last night on TV, he could have threw a lot better.
Were you intrigued that discussion that Paul Molitor talked about after the game was they talked about, do you want to go back out for the eighth? Because I think he was actually kind of comfortable with what he was seeing in Phil Hughes. And, you know, I think he said, you know, I love the bullpen. Let's do the work. Are you okay with that as a manager yourself?
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I give, you know, I think what Paul's been doing is whatever he's been doing has been working in the bullpen. He's turned that bullpen around the last 3 weeks.
It's incredible.
And that's one of the reasons why they ran on that run.
So. It is, and the thing is the bats have gotten a little bit quiet, yeah, and they still have a lot of
but
chances.
But hitting's always going
to
be the most inconsistent part of the game, you know. But if your bullpen is steady and your starters give you 6-7 innings, you got a good chance to have a good run here.
As long as you're not beating them down.
Exactly.
We see that so often. We'll be back with more. This is On Deck Radio. Give us your call at 651-989-9105. More right after this. You know what, Gene? My son's still reeling from meeting the guitarist Alex Lifeson
from
Rush. Reeling. Ooh. At Hazeltine National.
You ever seen him in concert?
6 times.
It's a must. Question.
Yeah, absolutely. They and a couple of other bands would fall into the hobby category.
Is that right? I didn't realize you're a big musician.
I am, actually. Wow. And yeah, true story, my brother is 6 years older than me, and I loved growing up through high school in the 80s like I did, but I look back at him freshman year through senior year, 75 to 79. Talk about a party. Oh my God. Those guys were insane. We were school kids. You know, we were school children compared to those guys.
Well, I graduated in 80 from high school. So
you know, and so the whole thing was the music was great, and it was there was no more Vietnam War. There, you know, I mean, you're free and easy now, right? I mean,
anything goes, right?
Yeah,
anything
well, the goes. Great part is he had the excuse that she had nothing to live for, right? So you're going to do it anyway. Oops, no, we do. That's pretty good stuff. This is On Deck Radio. He's Gene Lark, and I'm Pete Wagner. David Helmer behind the controls. We've got a caller. Where's Billy from?
Minneapolis.
Billy from Minneapolis. How are you?
Hey, really good, guys. I'm thinking, like, just this year and, of course, into the future, but, like, this year's Twins, if we were to bring up Sano and Buxton and Vargas, you know, you can't give up on a power bat, and he gets hot, what would we do? Move like Plouf to left or first, or how would we play them all? I'm sure Hicks would probably be maybe an extra, or just tell him goodbye or whatever, and put Buxton in center. And I don't know how would you guys play that out.
Well, we had this conversation, Billy, thanks for the call. We had this conversation last week about Trevor Plouffe and how impressed I've been with him and his development and his play, not only as a hitter, a power guy from the right side, but from a good defensive perspective, too. So, to me, Sano's got to start playing a little bit better. Yeah, he's the next coming of whoever for the last few years, but I'm not moving Plouffe right now. He's the guy that I want in the lineup in the middle of it at third base, doing a great job. So, you know, the Vargas situation, he's got to be able to drive the ball now. You don't want a DH that size who hits singles and strikes out quite a bit. So I don't know what he's going to be doing down in AAA, but, you know.
Right now, if I could jump in on that, Gene, he does have two home runs. He's knocked in four and scored four. He's five
since
for
11. Sent down?
Yeah, in AAA, okay. So okay. He's got the power stroke. You know, and he's been scrapping, I think. We've had a lot of multiple hit games. And
I like him. I told you that. I thought over the next 3 years he's going to lead the league in home runs. So
hate to see another big poppy go away.
Yeah, true. You know, he's going to get his chances. I mean, the fact that he's a switch hitter is awesome. Getting back to Billy's question with Sano or Buxton, you know, Rosario got called up. He hit early real well. He's struggling a little bit. He's playing good defense, though. Hicks is playing fantastic again in center field, which is always just hit a little bit for me. Just hit a little bit. And, you know, from the left side, you throw him a breaking ball, it's almost lights out. He's not going to put the ball in play. So he really isn't. He hasn't made a good adjustment there. So, you know, I know Buxton and Sano have done well in AA, and they might even be promoted to AAA pretty soon. So I just like the lineup right now. Hicks is a guy that's got to hit. We've said this for the last 3 years, but he can flat out catch it.
He can catch it. And by the way, Billy from Minneapolis, thanks for calling. The thing about Aaron Hicks, and we get into our five question segment at the bottom of the hour, that's going to be one of them. We're going to save it for that. Okay. So it's funny the things
Billy knew about that question.
Well, it's like he did. I mean, it's like, what, did you write my show for me, man? I mean, no, but it's the truth. And that's an area I want to go. And some of it really talks about in place of the depth because, you know what, the man known as Sugar Shane Robinson, I like his game a lot. And, you know,
on a good team, I love his game. On a good team, he's a fourth outfielder.
Well, that's
he's
what
not
he was.
A platoon, but he was more of a starter in the early of the year because Schaefer wasn't doing a job.
I mean, in St. Louis. He was a fourth outfielder there. He get his 90 games
exactly.
And his 350 at bats. He was dangerous. You can rely on him, and you know. But that's what you want that guy to eventually be.
We talk about depth all the time on this show, Wags, and the Rosario, the Buxton, the Sano, Plu. That's what you want as a general manager. You want guys. If someone gets hurt, if someone goes in a slump, to move, be able to have the ability to move someone up right away and not miss a beat. Right now, they're starting that process, or they've been in that process for a few years, and. You know, are they one call away? Is Buxton one call? Is Sano one call is down or a center fielder goes down? Probably. They're probably going to get a shot real quick if someone goes down.
651-989-9105 for your calls. This is intelligent baseball talk for 1 hour. Well, I will put that in quotation marks, but it is nonetheless. And we're talking everything baseball. By the way, at 11:45, Tim Kolomainen is going to join us, and we're going to talk high school baseball. And, Gene, I want to kind of foray into that. The crowd at Braemar Field yesterday, for just a simple Section 6 first round double elimination game was fantastic. I mean, it was great.
I wasn't there.
I was, trust me, and you can hear me. But the crowd for both sides, I mean, high school baseball, I think, is one of the more underrated, especially come playoff time, things you can watch.
Well, the section you were watching, the Edina Hopkins game, is a section that's wide open. I think Edina was rated number 3, Hopkins 6 or 7.
And they same record.
Yeah, and Hopkins is in the same conference, obviously, and they split during the year. So it was going to be a good game. There are good players here, and the fact that, you know, I think Braemar is a nice outlet to watch a game. So it's always fun to go out there and watch whoever plays. But it's going to be interesting. I was obviously, since I coached the summer ball, I'm really, really in tune with the Edina program, and I hope they go far because I don't start playing my season until their season's over, so which I hope is in a few weeks in the state tournament. But, you know, good pitching last night. Tyler Ekberg threw the ball well. I heard Michael Grove threw the ball well, too. And your guys from Hopkins.
Sean Williams.
Yeah, you're
7 innings.
Yeah, so, in high school, this is what you look for because in the season, you know, both teams, I think, are around 500. Both teams had good pitching during the year. And last night, again, same thing. Good low scoring game.
It's just such a fast season. And
yeah.
I think, you know, when you're managing coaching at the high school level, you have to weave in your players and get your mix the way you want it. Is there a little bit of a difference when you get to the Legion schedule where you have a little more time?
Well, I have a big advantage because I watch the high school season and see what different positions guys can play, in my opinion, look at the pitching staff, who's going to be my top guys. And in Legion's a little little bit different too, because you could have kids coming from private schools that live in the association and has the ability to play with the association. So it's a little bit different faces at times. So, but I have, as a guy who's watched high school, I have a big advantage in trying to evaluate my team based on, because you could watch tryouts all you want and you could watch practices all you want. In game situations, you see who steps up, who plays a little scared, who's intimidated based on their age. So you see a lot by watching guys in a batter's box game time.
When you also have guys like your boy Vandy coming back,
yeah.
And of course John Leach and those kinds of players, yeah. Troy Peterson, which help, and some teams benefit from that, some don't, but it adds to the mix. And back to our Twins talk, the depth that we talk about, injuries are one thing, but I think in baseball one thing that's missed is it's such a psychological game, and there comes a point when you can't give up on guys. Kind of back to Billy's question about Kenny Vargas, and that's going to be in the five questions segment too as well, but I think at some level you have to stick with players and let them play through things too.
Yeah, and it's a difficult decision. What I try to do is evaluate how they're handling it mentally when a guy goes into a slump. And it's the same thing that, I was told when I was in a slump in the professional ranks. How are you going to handle it? If you're going to be throwing helmets around, it's time to sit down and watch the game. If you're going to be a guy who's going to keep trying to fight and practice, the only one way you get out of slumps, whether it's a defensive slump, a pitching slump, or a hitting slump, is you got to put the work in to get overcome. Because everybody goes, doesn't matter how talented you are, you're going to go into your period of time during the season where you look like and you feel like you've never played the game before. It just happens. So it's how you take that attitude to the dugout, to the practice field, and then to the game. Everybody, I think any good coach is going to let some young guy fight through the slump if he mentally can do it.
You know what's interesting about that? I was in a band and I had a guitar player that I played with that was really terrific. And he said to me, I promise you, one night, you're going to just forget your part.
Yeah.
And you're just going to go. And I'm like, I never really thought about it because I probably have before. But when it happened, I'm like, yeah, he's right.
Yeah.
And I think we take little vacations mentally. I'm just kind of equating it to that. And it happens at work, too.
And I say this to parents all the time because they're always worried about, Johnny's not, he hasn't got a hit in 2 weeks. Well, if you've never been in a batter's box, and you don't know how it feels when you can't see the ball come out of the pitcher's hand, but 2 weeks ago it looked like a grapefruit to you, it doesn't make any sense, but it happens. It happens. And for whatever reason, you get a stupid bloop single, and all of a sudden the weights of the world is off your back, and the next at bat you feel so much better.
It's about positivity. Something positive happens, that can be the trigger.
And the thing is, it's a learning thing, too, because when you're in that batter's box, you are on an island. There is nobody that can help you out. And you will be embarrassed. I don't care how good you are. You will be embarrassed by certain pitches. And there are certain pitches that cannot get you out. Same guy, same mind, same stance. But there's one guy that's going to make you look terrible, and it's going to be a guy that you could crush.
The worst thing that can happen is doubt, too.
Yeah.
Once you start saying, for a split second, and it can overtake your psyche and being. And the thing is, I think with a ball club, you have to hope that it's not everybody that's going through it, because there are phases when that does happen, when there's 2, 3, 4 guys in a lineup, and it's like, oh, boy, we don't have a lot to turn to here. A couple things on the Twins are 23-18 now. They're going against Chris Sale of the Chicago White Sox. Trevor May with the haircut that looks like he's straight out of 1936. Have you noticed that thing?
Yeah,
what is going on?
That's his look.
Look.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Then you got Samardzija last night.
Well, it's two opposites. But the thing that May's got going looks like he's circa Al Capone, that era. It's quite classic.
Yeah.
It's almost 2 months into the season. The Twins are 5 games over .500. There were 6 going into the Chicago series. I think if you're a Minnesota Twins fan, you've got a nice sample size of a quarter of the year. This team's playing some great baseball, and they're exceeding my expectations at this stage. How about you?
Mine too. Absolutely correct. And I think after that first week, we go, here we go again. They just righted the ship right away, and all facets of the game are playing above average, in my opinion, which is, they got a good run. Don't forget, we have 2 wild card opportunities, so who knows what's going to happen. We got a long season. I'm not saying that, but at this point in time, you got to say they got a shot.
And if the season ended today, your Minnesota Twins would be that second wild card team. And we would have said that last week as well, and the week before.
Yeah.
So, is it a trend, David Helmer?
Absolutely.
All right, we'll take a break. We come back. 5 questions with Gene Larkin. This is On Deck Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Helmsy, you there?
I'm around still.
Do you know what this song is?
Huge Nuge.
It's Big Time Nuge. You know what it's called?
Kill It and Grill It.
Love it. No, this is called Just What the Doctor Ordered.
And that's the Minnesota Twins?
No, this is Gene Larkin. He's the doctor.
Oh.
He's gonna answer these questions, and he's gonna in some instances come up with this prescription to the ailment.
You try to stump me though. Let me hear these questions.
There's no stumping going on here. All right. If I'd have known that, I'd have gone on a different route here. First one, Trevor May goes to the bullpen. He has a 7.09 ERA, 41 strikeouts.
Alex Meyer. Holy cow.
Start over.
Trevor May's in the big leagues.
Why did I say that? Jeez Louise. And let me cross this out. You know why?
I know where you're going with it.
You know why I said that?
Why?
Because Alex Meyer's not in the forefront of my mind. to the pen with a 7.09 ERA, 41 strikeouts, 24 walks, and 39 and a third innings as a starter. His strikeout to walk ratio is 5.5. There's been talk of his 6'9" frame, you know, having a hard time gathering in all the moving parts to replicate the motion delivery. Sounds like an excuse to me. And then he's also the 28th ranked prospect in baseball. You have to send him to the bullpen. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, it's a bad thing for the organization and for him, because it's a huge step backward if you're going to be the top prospect in AAA fighting for rotation in case of an injury to the front line guys. But again, I talk about this a lot, Wags, when Numi was here a few weeks ago, about guys who've never really had a lot of failure in their career because they've been touted because of their ability. And you know, when I read some of the quotes and that Rob Anthony says he's almost glad that he got sent back to the bullpen, that kind of makes me shudder a little bit from a competitive standpoint, that I was always kind of got to try to fight through it and don't demote me from the starting pitching to a bullpen. I want to fight through my problems as a starter, especially at AAA, where, you know, winning and losing is not the biggest issue in AAA. You're trying to develop people to help you at the big league level. So I think it's a situation where he is mentally a little bit of a mess right now, not throwing a lot of strikes. Maybe it's because he's supposedly been the guy that's right on the cusp of getting to the big leagues, and he's so close in that, you know, he's not ready yet to handle failure, and which is scary from a front office perspective, because if you can't handle failure in AAA, what's going to happen if you start to fail in the big leagues?
Is there a hierarchical issue for pitchers, especially in the minor leagues, if you start becoming a bullpen guy? I mean, tell us about
the belief of being
a starter and a bullpen guy.
In the old days, when you know the guys in the bullpen weren't good enough to be starters, and no one really wanted to be in the bullpen. Well, now it's everybody's got a great role in the bullpen, so you can start developing guys in AAA and AA for that role in the big leagues. If you feel like they don't have that extra pitch where they're going to be a good enough starter, but they've good enough velocity-wise or got that one strikeout pitch for two or three innings, you can develop that in AA and AAA. So I don't think that is so prevalent anymore. But for a guy like this who's been touted as a one of the top five guys in AAA rotation or in their organizational rotations, whatever it is, this is a big step backwards in my opinion.
I mean, I know they're talking about this as just to get his game back in order to get back in the rotation, but really, why not, if he throws in the high 90s like he does, get the big explosive closing concept out of him? Is that a possibility?
From an organizational sense, what I think they're trying to do is just try to create some positive reinforcement in his mind. Go out there, throw an inning or two, have good outing, good location, maybe mix in another inning the next time, and then all of a sudden he's thrown four or five and get him back in the rotation. Maybe it's only a two-week deal. I'm assuming from their front office they think it's only going to be a two-week deal. Just try to do a little bullpen work with the AAA pitching coach in between innings in a game. So maybe it's only a two-week deal. Maybe it's something that he needs. We're going to find out real quick.
We certainly will. So on to our next one. Aaron Hicks, to me, is a different player. I mean, the hitting, I mean, he hit in four straight to open up his stint back here. He's at 242 right now in the season. Had a couple hits the other day in Pittsburgh. But he's so good defensively. Yeah. It's the best thing we've had in center since Torrey Hunter patrolled. I have a heart. What's going to happen here? Because you got Arcia coming back eventually. Rosario's probably going to have to go down,
right,
don't you think? Because he's not really hitting.
Right.
And then you got Schaefer on the shelf. You got Shane Robinson. But then you've also got the factor if you want Eduardo Escobar's bat in the lineup as well, because you like it. So he's kind of looks like he's been converted to left field. So there's a log jam happening here.
Yeah, and that's what you want. As I mentioned in the previous segment, you want depth. when you mention every one of those guys, there's one or two things that they do very, very well, and then it's probably a thing that they don't do very, very well, and you can pick out one thing from Mahler's perspective. Well, this, he can't do this, so maybe he's a guy. We talk about Hicks a lot because he's the last 3 years he's been given that job, and this is the first year they made him start in AAA. Defensively, as you mentioned, he is very, very good. He's got a terrific jump on the ball. He lays out. He's not afraid of the wall. He's a leader out there. He takes over from the left and the center field. Right-handed hitting, he's okay. Left-handed hitting, he really, to me, he still leaves a lot to be desired as far as making contact with guys on third base with less than two out. So is that going to be always the case? I don't know if he's ever going to get the opportunity to get 500 at-bats straight during the year because he's just that weak from the left side. And then you got the Buxton situation coming up probably within 2 or 3 months. But I think he's a different player. He's a more composed player. I think Mahler likes the fact that he's involved in the game, engaged in the game. We've talked about that last week as well. So there's more positives and negatives with Aaron Hicks, and the fact that he does catch the ball so well, I think, creates an opportunity for him even just coming off the bench.
I agree with you. He's definitely more professional in his approach. You can see it to the naked eye. And the part that's just compelling to me is he's been a valued player in this organization, did very well in AAA when he was down to start the season. He's shown many flashes of things, but it just creates such an interesting competitive mix for the outfield slots with different types of players. And I'm just kind of, it's going to be fun to see where that shakes down.
Yeah, you got Arcia coming off pretty soon, who's the power guy, but he's a kind of a tough guy to have out in left field in a trying situation, whether you're up by one run late in the game. Then you got the Shane Robinson guy, who can play all three positions and catch the ball for you. Good jumps on the ball, but he's an okay hitter. Then you got Schaefer, who's a speed guy, hasn't done a lot of that on the base, has been hurt a little bit. He hadn't hit at all this year, so maybe he's the odd man out. Rosario kid comes up, big home run, his first major league at bat. Good defensive player, hasn't really done too much offensively. He's probably going to be the odd man out because they want him to play every day, and he can't do that in the big leagues right now.
For another year, too, this year, next year, Torrey Hunter's not going anywhere, right?
Been
that guy's been absolutely fabulous. It's almost like he's never missed a beat here in a Minnesota Twins uniform. This one has been interesting to me. Tommy Malone is 3-0 in three starts.
Yeah.
His ERA is zero. He's got one complete game, literally 0.00. He's got 23 and a third innings in those three starts, 33 strikeouts against two walks. So, I mean, obviously he has nothing left to prove there. And so this is a two-part question. Is our rotation in Minnesota so good that a guy that's just dominating at AAA shouldn't be in it, and he's a left-hander, and I don't understand why he's not, but don't ask me who'd be the odd man out yet, but I get it. But you got to consider that's legit. And then the second thing is, when you're down there dominating like that, how frustrating is that?
Oh, it's very frustrating, but you know, they always say, just do what you're supposed to do. Do what you can control. Well, he's controlled a lot over the past month since he's been down. Like you said, he's dominated. He can't do any better at the AAA level. So as far as your first question, is the rotation that good? No, it's not that good. It's a good rotation. As some guys who start really, really well, and then there's other guys who, you know, we brought up Nolasco for the last 2 weeks. He's not doing anything really, really good to say, well, last year was an aberration. No, he's scuffling. He's pitching five innings, throwing 100 pitches every start. That's not good enough.
Deep counts, yeah,
deep
absolutely.
Counts. So, you know, is he the guy that's going to be odd man out if they want to make? I don't know what goes through the front office mind when you've got a guy making that much money and still pitches five innings. You know, what do you do? What do you do? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. But as far as Tommy Malone, he's going to say, okay, either get me out of here to another organization because we know everybody wants left-handed starting pitching, or bring me up and see if I can not duplicate but help the rotation going forward here. Again, a good problem for the Twins to have, a bad situation for Tommy Malone because he doesn't want to spend too much more time in AAA.
My thing is it's a left wing.
Yeah.
And it's a left arm. And I just, to me, it's, you apparently don't seem to have a lot of those that are major league ready today.
Right.
And so, to me, that's an asset that's difficult to get rid of. But this is going to be a talker we'll probably have coming up down the bend. What do you like most about coaching baseball?
all, from my level, coaching kids is developing kids not only to enjoy the game of baseball, it's helping prepare a little bit into the college situation. You know, I'm an old man. I'm an old dinosaur. I've been through a lot. I've had great coaches. I had some crappy coaches. And I always try to pick things out of crappy coaches that said, well, I will never do that to a kid that was done to me. And I tell this to my son all the time who finished up college baseball. I said, someday you might be a coach, and someday you might say, you know what, this reminds me of a situation that I had to adjust to based on coaches. Because everybody wants to play every inning. Everybody thinks they're the best, right? So you have to have really heart-to-heart, man-to-man conversation with 16, 17, 18-year-old kids. And they don't always like what you say, but I think they appreciate the honesty. And I always try to bring honesty to the table. I might not be the right one for right now for you, but all I'm trying to do is look out for you first and the team second.
Well, and sometimes coaches don't want to have those conversations because it's uncomfortable. No. And there, some are better at it than others, but the communication is a key part. Fifth question, you ready?
Sure.
The rivalry with Chicago and the White Sox seems like it's probably our richest of current modern era. Why do you think that was, and did you feel like there was one with Chicago back in your days?
It was a rivalry. When I played, it was the Oakland A's.
That's what I have down. Yeah,
the Bash Brothers and the steroid boys, as I said, I could say it. But
medically helped.
Yeah, and we had, you know, we were the first or second during the term. The 7 years that I played with the Twins, and even when we played very well, Oakland seemed like to have a little bit of an edge to us and beat us by a game or two, blah, blah, blah. But the White Sox has always been good. I think part of it, too, is the Hawk Harrelson thing. You know, he's not a big Twin fan, and I think
why?
I don't know. He got on Herbie 1 year. I remember that. I don't remember exactly what happened there, but he got on Herbie 1 year, and I remember one game where he was blasting for something, and Herbie hit a big home run in Chicago and helped us win the game that time. So I don't know, but I think the proximity, obviously, is good. I mean, I used to love playing the White Sox. Even in the old park, it was a, you know.
Oh, remember that?
Yeah, it was.
The gothic left field.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, why is it that a broadcaster like Hawk Harrelson can impact rivalries? Is that good or bad?
Oh, I don't. I think it's
weird.
It's fun. It's kind of fun. I have one guy spouts off of an opinion about either a play or a team or a city, and it just riles up the fans.
You're going Burt Blylevin.
Riles up the fans.
You're going Burt Blylevin, Detroit, Michigan. I love it. Tip Kolomainen's going to join us on Deck Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
Go Hornets, go!
High school baseball, we're going to take that turn right now. Is
I know everybody in the Twin Cities is a big fan of the Edina Hornets.
I know, I just wanted to throw it out there.
Everybody hates the Hornets.
Why? Okay, so you're not an Edina guy, but you're in it now, so what is it?
Oh, I think it's the reputation of them having a lot of money, and you know the field, this is a beautiful field.
Well, they spend it.
They do.
I mean, like in the right ways. Have you checked out, you know, the Dome, right? Have you been up there?
It's beautiful.
Have you been up there?
There's a lot of towns now with beautiful indoor facilities, though.
They're giving athletes a chance to train in the off season and really compete with the warm weather markets.
Well, it's a different animal now as an athlete in off seasons than I grew up. It's like, you know, I say it all the time. I played every sport, and I didn't pick up my baseball glove till the basketball season was over.
How it was.
Kids don't do that now. They, you know, very rarely do you see a guy.
They're seeing you. At players only.
They are.
Nevers Larkin.
You know, we can go into that discussion some other week, but, you know, you go back and forth, what's the best for the kids? You always do that all the time, and, you know, I've run a business where it's off-season training, and is that the best all the time for the kids? I think certain kids, yes. I think certain kids, no.
We'll get into that discussion point down the road. Tim Kolomainen from BreakdownSportsUSA.com. Why does everybody hate Moorhead so much?
You know, they love Moorhead, don't they? When they come down to the city, state tournament, the other student sections love to chant for Moorhead.
Oh, we're going to leave it at that.
I'm going to leave it at that. We won't go any further.
Family-run program.
I love the song, Don't Stop Believing. There's only a handful of teams that have stopped believing here. We're kind of just starting to baseball playoff though.
Well, Tim, let's just jump into this real quick. The Section 5 and the 3. We're going to talk high school baseball here to close out the show as the playoffs. The Section playoffs, which are really state tournament, MSHSL-run tournaments, are underway. Mounds View is the defending state champions. They had to work hard to get past the eighth seed in their first round game. That one, 2-1. They're going to take on Centennial as they move forward. If you win that first double elimination game, it is so important.
Oh, absolutely, especially with the pitching you face. I mean, we're talking Section 5 there with Mounds View. Did you see the scores of all four of those yeah. games that they played yesterday?
Nobody had more than two runs.
Yeah, I know, 2-1, 1-0, 2-1, and 2-1. I mean, you get pitching like that in the playoffs, and anybody can beat anybody else.
Looks to me like the bats tightened up there, Tim.
Well, a lot of times, you play that game of, do you throw your ace in the first-round game if you're facing a lower-seeded team, or do you hang on to them for a day and try to get him in the next game? And I don't know, with scores like those, I'm guessing we saw a lot of aces in that first round.
Tim, that was a debate that was had. I talked to Gene a little bit. If you have an ace and you're playing a team that maybe is, let's say, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 win team, do you throw them because there is no tomorrow in that knockout first round game to get into the double elimination? Gene, what do you do?
I always win first game. I mean, I don't really worry about the second game till after the first game.
Gotta have it, don't you?
Gotta have that first game. And if my guy is really, really good and I'm facing a real low seed, maybe I can get him out of there early in the game if my team dominates early. That's the way I look at it. I want that first win without question.
Tim, the one.
I like that. I like that idea.
To me,
thanks, Tim.
There is no tomorrow. In the Section 2 AA, this is, I think, the deepest of the sections. Number one, Chaska, ekes by Mankato West, 3-1. And then it was Hutchinson over Minnetonka, by a score of 5-4 at Hutchinson. And then Eden Prairie, defeats Shakopee by a score of 5-1. Waconia upends number two seed and highly regarded Chanhassen, sending Chanhassen downstairs to the losers bracket, needing to work their way back up against guys what I think is a very good number six seeded Shakopee Sabre team.
Yeah, ranked 20th in the state, Shakopee. You got six teams ranked in the top 20 there in that section alone. I mean, like you say, if you lose that first game, you got no margin for error anymore. You're in trouble if you run into a hot pitcher the rest of the way. Waconia has got, they've got that ace. I mean, that 1-0 game against Chanhassen, that was Jake Stevenson all the way.
Yep.
Complete game, 9 strikeouts. I mean, that's the kind of guy that can carry you past a higher seeded team easily. Now, can Waconia back that up with their next guy? We'll find out.
Well, here's the interesting thing, though. They don't play till the 25th. Gene, can you come back with him?
Well, again, you're looking at the health of the young man. I know he's going to be a gopher next year, so it really depends on him. And, it's a tough call. Yeah, of course, you'd love to have him come back on a few days' rest, but you have to ask him, how do your arm feel and all that stuff. So
you discuss it, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's absolutely in the discussion phase. Tim, so I think anything can happen here in this section. There could be a team or two that creates some havoc down on the loser's bracket as well, which can work their way back through.
Yeah, there's no weak teams. I mean, every team that's left in that section has the capability of pulling some upsets and maybe getting out of there. I mean, you're not going to save anybody against a weak seed in that section because you don't have one.
And in the Section 6 in the Class 3A, Wyzetta gets the number one seed. They eke past Robbinsdale Cooper by a score of 3-2. Southwest has been a very interesting team. They continue to win. They take out Orono. Orono beats St. Louis Park. It was a 5-12 seed game there. It was Orono with a 1-0 win, and then they come back against Minneapolis Southwest. Don't have enough there. They get 10 run, and they get sent down to the loser's bracket. Then Hopkins defeats Edina last night, and Robbinsdale Armstrong defeats Richfield. An interesting run there because there's some decent teams, but I don't know, not what we've seen from that section in previous years.
Yeah, I mean, Wyzetta is the only ranked team. They're ranked 18th, and they're the number one seed. And you've got a lot of teams with right around 500 records or maybe a little bit under in some cases too, but there is talent there. It's just maybe not the depth of talent that you see on some of those other teams in more of the loaded sections, but more close games. I mean, other than that Minneapolis Southwest 10-run game, we've got every game, it feels like to me, is really just a toss-up right down to that final out.
And if you go over to the Section 4 in the Class 3A, how about this? It's Matamidi taking on Roseville, Woodbury and Stillwater Area High School, Creighton, Durham Hall, and Eastridge. I think this is a sneaky good section right here.
Yeah, I mean, people look at it and think, hey, we're due for a Matamidi-Creighton rematch. But North has got a top, they're a top 15 team also, North St. Paul there as the number two seed. They actually got the two over Creighton.
Yeah, East Ridge has got some quality players on their team, too. Woodbury, we saw Woodbury beat Moundsview earlier this year, too, so we know they can knock off Giants. So, yeah, let's play off baseball here.
Which is great, Gene, which is interesting, too. You don't have your typical football powers or your typical hockey powers that provide maybe great baseball teams. What I like about the baseball season is it can be anybody at any time.
Yeah, and it's, again, baseball is unique a little bit, and it's probably similar to hockey when you got that hot goalie. If you got that one guy that can come back, we talked about Jake Stevenson. We faced Jake last year in a Delano 4th of July tournament, and he threw a gem against us. And then I know a little bit about Chaka because they knocked our Dino Hornets out of Legion in the subsection last year with Sheldon Mix, who was a very good player, went on to a nice, I think he's at Mankato, State of St. Cloud, so they wanted to. Anyway, you've got if you've got two good high school pitchers, a lot of teams don't. A lot of teams have one guy who can dominate and then another, guy or two that are okay. And if you got to hit the ball around the park a little bit to score some runs for them. But if you got two guys who can throw strikes, you got a really good chance of going deep in the playoffs.
And it's about mistakes, too. So if you're pitching the ball well, the fewest mistakes and the most opportune hitting, obviously cliches as they are.
Pitch and catch.
That's what it gets. Pitch the ball, catch the ball, go hit. Tim, how about the Class 2? Are there anything's the 2A? Are there anything standing out to you in that one?
In 2A? Tua hasn't really started a whole lot of play yet. I will say I like Section 6, obviously. He's got St. Cloud Cathedral as the top seed in the east bracket of that section. But there are four teams ranked in the top 15 in the east side of that bracket, so it's not going to be easy for Cathedral. Teams that are familiar with, though, Little Falls, Ricori, Albany, they've beaten all of them during the year, but, we'll see what happens come playoff time. But those guys really, I think they get started in earnest today and then all through next week. I will say Class 1A, though, there was one upset, and here's a team that's not believing anymore. The top seed in Section 1, Kenyon Wanamingo, lost 7-6 to the 8 seed Goodhue in their first game, and that was before we hit the double elimination portion. So, yeah, they're one and done. That's probably pretty harsh for them.
Off to American Legion Baseball. Hey, Tim, that's the fastest hour in baseball.
there's a lot to talk about right now. Twins running the way they are. I mean, this is good stuff right now. We're in the thick of it for baseball fans.
We got the Saints underway. Don't forget to check out Ben Olson and Sean Aronson, 5 o'clock, right here on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket. Their pregame show runs through 6:45, and then they take it to Saints baseball every home game, Saturday nights, live right here on 105 The Ticket. David Helmer behind the studio, the controls in the studio here. Tim Kolomainen on the phone, Gene Larkin. I'm Pete Wagner. Have a great week. So long, everybody.